Hello, everyone. Welcome to the latest edition of the You Should Run podcast. I'm your host, Bridgeport Borough Council member Tony Heil. Bridgeport is nestled between King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, and Norristown. And if you don't know where those are, then really doesn't matter. I'm not the important part of this show. Our guests are. And if you've listened to past episodes, you know we've talked with people who've run for things like council and like their local community, to judge, to mayor and Congress. And today we're going to talk to a friend of mine who I know through the YEO network, Young Elected Officials, Marita Garrett, who's run for more than one thing, being a council and mayor in Wilkinsburg, PA. And really appreciate her perspective on what got her involved in politics and why more people should run for office. So I can't give her a good enough introduction. I need her to do it. So Marita, thanks for joining the podcast today.
No, thank you, Tony, for having me. I'm excited to be a part of this.
Yeah, I'm sorry we had to go back and forth. I know you had a loss with your dog, right?
Yeah, my fur baby, Marley, who passed away last month, and actually now transitioning where we added another fur baby to the household. So I still had my one, but now added another fur baby a week from today, so that's also been, you know, extra to add on top of all the wonderful things that are going on.
Well, it's I know I don't have a pet myself, but I did growing up.
You have children.
And I have children, yes, and I talk about them too much, I'm sure. But I do appreciate people are close with their pets, and I just want to send my condolences on here for your loss.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
But I don't want to talk about your losses so much as your wins, because you've won elections, but you didn't just start out winning, you started out running. So give us a little background about how you got into politics. Were you always a political person? Is it something you cared about a lot, or just something kind of one day force you into it?
Yeah, so I definitely, from a young age, was always civically engaged and politically aware growing up. In my household, with my family, you know, we participated. It was expected every local election you participate. I'm originally from Akron, Ohio, so as young as I can remember, you know, I was going to the polls with my mom. She would have me in the booth with her to, you know, watch the process, and it was really an exciting time. I never, originally growing up, never saw myself necessarily as, you know, running for office. It was just more so being engaged. My first foray into politics, though, was unfortunately a loss when I ran for the much coveted seat of social chairperson, for eighth grade social chairwoman. So that actually was one of the experiences where I was like, oh, you know what, I don't think I'll ever get into politics. I'll just continue to be aware. So, you know, always aware, never really in the past saw myself as, you know, that person who would be the elected official or politician.
Well, I'm glad you didn't give up and when you were 13 or 14 years old. But do you remember your first election since you and your mom made it a priority together? I can remember my parents talking about the 92 election, but do you remember any of those elections as a kid in particular?
Yeah, definitely remember 92 presidential. In Ohio, there was one particular one. I can't remember the year. I think it was 94, I feel like, but it was one of our gubernatorial elections in Ohio, and George Voinovich was up, and he had previously been mayor of Cleveland, different roles, but really just a great guy. Funny enough, he was a Republican, and not that that really matters, one of the reasons Ohio is a swing state, but I remember my mom saying, like, you know, Voinovich is the better candidate, but Republicans are just giving Clinton such a hard time. I don't know who to vote for. And then I took the pen, you know, back in our day, it was, you hit that little pen to, like, you know, check the ballot or clip the ballot, the Chaz, whatever they call them now. And she was just like, wait, what did you do? And I said, well, you said he was a better person anyway, so I voted for Voinovich for her.
Well, I'm sure you guys made amends at some point.
Right, yeah.
It's interesting, like, what we thought of as what Republicans were even then to what politics is now, like, it feels completely different. If I found out that the guy running for governor was supporting the Trump administration, I wouldn't think, oh, they're a nice person. It would be very hard for me to be okay with it.
Yes. So, yes, everyone listening, this was 1994. Different time.
But a lot of things changed, and eventually you ended up in Wilkinsburg, PA. So what, I'm from Western PA, originally. I'm from a Steelers and Penguins fan, and if Pittsburgh gets a baseball team, I'll support the Pirates. What's Wilkinsburg like?
Yeah, so, you know, I think you can definitely attest and understand, you know, we're almost the plight of the small boroughs. So we're not, we're not less than the big cities, but, you know, specifically for Wilkinsburg, we, you know, suffered from the steel mill decline, like majority of the communities, especially in Allegheny County, southwestern PA. And, you know, at one point in our heyday in the 1950s, 60s, we had a population of about 60,000. Now we're at 16,000, but we're back on kind of an upswing, a renaissance again. At, you know, one point, Wilkinsburg estimated between white and black flight to the suburbs. The crack epidemic of the 80s, early 90s, gang violence, all those things, which left communities like Wilkinsburg just, you know, kind of dead, essentially. But one of the great things about Wilkinsburg is its community spirit and investment and resiliency, which is bringing us back. So we have 16,000 people, but we have a very active citizenry. We have a lot of block watches, a lot of great capital planning projects that are happening to address our blight. And another unique thing about Wilkinsburg, which is one of our biggest assets, is not only our diversity, not just in terms of like ethnicity, but just, you know, makeup of people, age, cultural, religious affiliations. We're very diverse in that. And also, a lot of times people think we're a part of the city of Pittsburgh. You know, when people are driving through, they think, oh, this is Pittsburgh, whatever. I'm like, no, this is actually Wilkinsburg. So we're our own municipality, yet we get the benefits from having close proximity to, you know, a major city such as Pittsburgh, but then also neighboring a lot of other great municipalities so that we work together to really highlight, you know, what are the great things or the great things that are happening here.
Well, I mean, I remember the name growing up because Pittsburgh area is so parochial, as I say. It's like you go another street and everyone's so full of their identity, not in terms of, well, sometimes in terms of race and religion, but oftentimes just in terms of what their town is, whether it's like three blocks. And if you're from Troy Hill, you are this person. If you're from this, like 3 minutes away, you're an entirely different clique.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, Tony. Like, you know, the fact that Pittsburgh in itself has 90 neighborhoods and then Allegheny County has 130 municipalities. So you're absolutely right. Parochial is the best way to describe that. And, you know, I'm not originally from here, so I remember, to me, it's just like split, okay, northwest, south, or initially it was split like northwest, southeast. And it's like, oh no, north side has like, you know, 20 neighborhoods in itself, like you said, Troy Hill. You know, it creates an amazing and interesting dynamic around here.
So that brings me to, you eventually ran for office in what, 2013?
Yes, 2013.
So, and you were not a native of the town originally. You say you grew up in Ohio. So what spurred you to run, and what was the response like for you running your first election for council in Wilkinsburg?
Yeah, so it was interesting. At the time when I ran in 2013, I lived in Wilkinsburg for about 3 years. I've been in the Pittsburgh region since 2003, came up for school. But, you know, decided to stay here, plant my roots in Wilkinsburg, is specifically, you know, where I planted my roots by purchasing a home. And so I wanted to get more involved with the community. My background is community outreach and engagement, and I wanted to get involved in my own community. So it was almost kind of like a perfect storm in 2013. In 2013, our school district was placed on the financial watch list for the PA State Department of Education's watch list. Basically, you know, like, if we didn't get it together soon, we were on place to, you know, fast track to receivership, the state takeover, which is not ideal, you know, in any situation. So that was, you know, one thing. And then also that kind of shed light, okay, well, what's, you know, council been doing? What's our government even doing? So that was a time where people actually were like, well, the people who we know and we trusted and voted for so long, they're not doing the right thing for us. So we are ready to take a chance for something new, some fresh leadership, new eyes, you know, people to really represent us. So it worked in that favor. Of course, you know, my opponents, they would try to say, you know, oh, not from here, doesn't know what we need. But it backfired because so many opportunities have been given to incumbents just for us to end up and on the watch list and in Act 47.
So, and the response from the community were like, did they kind of listen and say, yeah, you guys don't, you don't understand what she's saying, you don't see what we're seeing, or was there a lot of pushback from you to get everyone to listen?
It was actually, I would say neither. It was more so even just engaging and educating residents and community members about what was at stake. A lot of, you know, when I was knocking on doors in 2013, majority of the doors I would knock on, everyone was number one, surprised somebody was even coming to their door. They would say, you know, in all my 40 years or 30 plus years of living here, no one's ever knocked on the door. I didn't even know we had council people, you know, all of those things. So what I was really providing to them, in addition to sharing and introducing who I was civic engagement and understanding what's going on right at their door, saying, you know, here's what's going to be on your ballot, here are the issues at stake, here's how we can work to get ourselves out of the situation that we're in right now. And people were responsive to that because they never had that. They never had someone come knocking on the door, number one, showing that they cared about them, and number two, even just caring about this community as a whole. And that really resonated with the voters and the residents, so much so that, you know, I won with 70% of the vote against, she was running for a third term, so against the long-term incumbent.
So you were, and was this, because Wilkinsburg, was it like a primary that mattered most then?
Exactly, same thing, yeah. So this is mostly a Democratic borough, so the primary is what really dictates that.
Which is fine, and I think it would good, because hopefully people are listening and think, well, they're my party, so Democrat's a Democrat, Republican's a Republican, but that's not true, right?
Right, right.
So you.
It's not true at all, and also, you know, I reached out to Republican voters as well, too, letting them know, you know, you do have a say in this, too. You can always write me in, you know, in the primary as well, since there wasn't a Republican candidate anyway.
And I know for me, knocking on doors for my race and talking to other people on this podcast, it's rewarding when you find out that someone was excited to meet a real candidate. But it's also kind of frustrating when you're like, why didn't you knock on these doors? Why hasn't anyone visited you?
It is because, you know, at the core of it, we're still residents ourselves. So, you know, that also means no one is knocking on our doors either. I could only, before I was knocking on doors, there was only one person who had knocked on my door, you know, while being here in Wilkinsburg. And I don't even think anyone knocked on my door when I was actually living in the city of Pittsburgh prior. So, yeah, if you do get upset that, you know, that's part of the reason why so many communities are in a bad situation. Now, they are that disengagement, that lack of communication and accountability. And that's something that I didn't want to see continue. I wanted to see, okay, you know, the primary to me was just the launching pad. So when I won that, and you know, especially as an elected official, the real work begins when you get sworn in. You know, the campaign part, that's just one thing. But once you get elected, you have to show up and you have to prove and, you know, state your case why people should continue to elect you. So one of the initiatives I launched right after winning, getting sworn in as council person, was looking for a community conversation is just for people to know, okay, here's what we have in our community, here's who our police department is, here's who our school board members are, council, anybody who has any type of official or leadership capacity in Wilkinsburg, and the resources that are available that people just wouldn't know about. So just, you know, really connecting, bringing residents together so we can work together to improve our neighborhood.
And, you know, I always talk about why, like, just the election part of it with this podcast, but you did that, then you ran for mayor. So what kind of challenges do you see on council that either you were prepared for, like, yeah, I know I'm going to have to deal with that, or maybe challenges and opportunities you were like, whoa, what? This is not what I expected.
Yeah, so I definitely, when first getting on council, and I came in with about four other new council people, so, you know, there was definitely a more progressive, newer, more innovative thinking majority, but because previous administrations had mired us in so much, you know, minutiae and working backwards, that I almost feel like the first 2 years of being on council was cleaning up previous administration's messes. That then, like, the last 2 years, it was like, okay, we cleaned that up. Now we're able to actually launch and implement things that we wanted to do, you know, when we first ran 2 years, or, you know, 2 years prior to being midway term. So I didn't realize that. I didn't realize, like, how bad a shape we were in. You know, you see it as a resident, as a taxpayer, those types of things, but then to actually see, like, the paperwork and what ordinances or legislation or agreements, collective bargaining, whatever was signed into, and you're just like, oh my gosh, this is absolutely crazy. So once getting past that, then I found it very rewarding to actually, again, launch and implement some of those platform or priority objectives that I ran on. Interestingly enough, I always tell people, if I hadn't been on council, I probably wouldn't have ran for mayor. Being on council would open my eyes to the role and the platform of what being mayor is effectively used, how it could possibly benefit one's community, because I don't know how your borough is. It's probably the same thing, but, you know, we are a weak mayor, strong council, meaning...
Yeah, same with us.
Okay, same thing. Yeah, so our mayor doesn't have, or I don't have, the legislative vote or power. Council does, but yet, as you know, titles do hold weight. So a lot of times people are, you know, it's the mayor. The mayor is the one who's the figurehead, who's supposed to be the public advocate. And so on one hand, while council, during my time on council, we were doing some really great and amazing things, we realized that the word wasn't getting out there because the role of mayor wasn't being fully utilized to what it could be.
So when you were on council, though, was it all just, well, Marita's going to have to do this, or did you have help on council? Were you part of a group, or did you have to come?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. So, not to mean to cut you off, but, yeah, when I was on council, like I said, I came with four other really great people, and then we got a couple other great people as well, too. No, it was definitely a team. You know, I'm committed to all things I do, so maybe I definitely, you know, elevated the role and was a very engaged council person. Somehow ended up on, like, three council committees as opposed to, like, the usual council person, which is beyond one. But I did have a great team at that time, and we were really able to get a lot of things done. You know, during that time on council, we were able to raise and secure over about probably close to, like, $2.6 million were previous council administrations. There wasn't any grant funding, any state funding, like, none of that stuff was coming.
It's always very rewarding to know you get that, and also, again, frustrating, like, you could have gotten this. Why did you right. Mess around and not do it? So, but it's also great, like, you wanted to get something done, and when you run for a local office, you can quickly get something done.
Yes, yes, and that's, you know, one of the things I always say, everything begins with local politics. You know, I just had a conversation with a colleague earlier today where, you know, people are trying to launch voting engagement, getting the vote out for November 2020. And I'm like, well, what about November 2019? You know, these are things that obviously federal affects us, but when we're talking about, you know, taxes, quality of air, quality of life, education, all of those things, that's local elections. And that's where you see, you know, on the day-to-day, and you can really affect, I would say, the most change.
So you're making change as mayor. You ran in 2017. What were the were there any different kinds of challenges or motivations for running for mayor than being on council?
Yeah, so I definitely would say running for council, I experienced ageism. So there were, my opponent was much older. So there were a lot of people, you know, who would say, oh, you're young, you don't have any experience, whatever. And it's like, well, this is part of getting experience, you know. Yes, you know, I'm only 26. No, I haven't had a long career in politics because, again, I'm 26. So there was definitely a lot of ageism in that one. And then in the mayoral race, it was definitely sexism. I ran against three of my opponents were, or my other three opponents were men. And so immediately I just saw the whole, you know, forget that I've done 4 years on council, that I've been involved in all of these things, whatever. But it's just like, oh, no, that doesn't mean anything. I'm just putting my hat in the race, you know, no experience, haven't come to any community meetings, like, haven't really even tried to get engaged in the community. But, you know, I'm qualified enough. So, you know, whether that's the Trump effect, whether that's sexism, which is kind of both, in both cases, that's what I definitely, you know, experienced. But thankfully, you know, the work doesn't lie. So when you do the work, you know, people see the work. And so the work that I had done while being on council really laid a great platform for people to say, you know, no, I've seen what she's done. I trust her and to continue on, and but in this new role. And so even, you know, in that four-way race, I won the 64% of the vote.
That, did you expect to win, like, by a big amount when you were running, or were you even surprised by how well you did?
Yes and no. So, like, one of the things is definitely after 2016's election, I knew, don't get comfortable, because, yeah, everyone, like, knew Hillary was the most qualified, was the best, should have won, but didn't. So that kind of already set me in a different mindset, like, yes, I know I'm the most qualified, and I've outworked my opponents and, you know, door knocked and all that stuff, but don't rely on that. So I put the work into earn that percentage, but you just never know, Tony. I'm sure, like, when you're election days, you can go in with a great feeling, but you still don't know. So what I will say is that when the final numbers came out, I was definitely overwhelmed with positive support and that feeling that, wow, the community made it clear this is what they wanted.
And, you know, so you've had a number of historic elections in Wilkinsburg, whether you're winning elections as a young person in their early 20s, or you are running and becoming a mayor as, well, had there been a female mayor before?
There was a female mayor before, but I'm the first Black female mayor.
So you have all of these things, what, young, person of color, woman, you have a lot of things that you have to represent. And the thing, you know, I was thinking about this with all of the awfulness that's going on with Trump's comments, whatnot. Like, you can't not represent those things, right? Like, as a young person on council, you can't not be young. As a person of color or a woman, you can't, like, turn those things off and just, I'm going to just be a mayor today. Like, you have to be that example and, you know, have that, even if you don't want that to be you that day. You know what I'm saying, right?
No, absolutely. You're right. Like, you know, people are going to see that I'm Black, but you can't change your skin color. They're going to see I'm a woman, and they're going to see I'm young. So that's immediately it. And even though I don't speak for every young Black woman elected official, I'm very aware and cognizant that representation matters, and we're not at that point where, you know, for example, just put in perspective, the state of Pennsylvania, we're ranked 49th in representation of women in government. So I understand that, okay, when I go into these spaces, that I'm not the majority. So I do have to speak on behalf or make sure that, you know, the agenda of populations and communities that I represent are being brought to the table.
And so you know that representation matters. One of the things I care about with this podcast is, like, I'll be blunt. I'm a straight white male, age 18 to 45, or 18 to whatever. I'm well represented, right? Like, despite what some people on the right will think, my interests are represented in politics. I'm fine on all those aspects. But, you know, you obviously are very aware of the fact that, one, you want to set a good example so that people don't think, well, next time. And then two, hopefully you can encourage other people from different backgrounds, not just people who are black, but people who are Hispanic or Indian American or whatever, that yes, I face things, but I have to do it because if Marita could do it, I can do it.
Absolutely. So, you know, sorry if I trailed off. I just heard a lot of commotion with the dog. But basically, yeah, everyone needs to be engaged and have and understand their role and part in this process. It's going to take all of us. So I also tell people that, you know, whether or not you decide to run for office, because I get it, not everyone is cut out or meant to hold an elected office position or whatever, but you still need to be engaged. So whether that's you, you know, being a part of your community's Parks and Rec committee or helping out on someone's campaign or something, you have to, in a way, run for something, like the name of your podcast. I mean, you should run, but, you know, people need to run for something or know their role in this whole process, because I am just one part of the puzzle. I am the elected official, but I also, you know, I represent the people, so I also need the people to talk and tell me what are their issues that are most concerning to them so that I can properly address that.
So, but also, you don't want to only be mayor so that you can be the black female mayor. You want to do it, that's an only thing, it's an important thing, but you obviously have things,
right.
You saw the example of, and it's not fair, like, no one ever says, how is Bill de Blasio gonna, you know, he's gotta represent the white male mayors, right? Like, no one ever says that to him. So, I don't...
Right, no one says that to them, and that's, again, going back to, that's why you have to increase representation so that it becomes the norm, so that we're not at a point where, yeah, you guys just how you hear, can't have two black presidents, we already had Obama, like, why not? Or even the concern of, like, a woman running for president. Why can't her running mate be a woman? Why can't women run against women? Hopefully if we're encouraging more women or we're encouraging more young people or black people and other people of color to run, eventually they're going to run against each other, which will be okay, because then that means that is now the norm, because no one says, oh, these white men are running against each other. So it's a part of increasing those numbers, making sure that you see the level of engagement from all different populations and orientation.
So what are the things you would you most want to do or are doing as mayor that, you know, a member of Congress can't do it because they're not a mayor, or governor can't do it because they're not a mayor? What is Marita doing as mayor that you think is important?
Yeah, Marita is listening to the people and assessing the need. So, you know, part of the beauty of local government and politics is that you really have that direct contact with the people. My office isn't in Harrisburg. My office isn't in D.C. My office is in Wilkinsburg, right in the police department, by the library. So you're getting all of that. So I never feel so far removed where I'm like, oh, I don't know what the community, or, oh, no one said, like, no, I'm there and I'm in it. Which gives me a great benchmark and understanding of, okay, yes, people said that this is the need. I'm hearing this is a major concern for this street or this neighborhood, and address it. You touched on it earlier that, you know, yes, government can be slow going, but local government, you can really make that change and see it.
Yeah, my neighbor got annoyed because there was a debris on his street from a housing development, and, you know, he emailed me, and I was like, all right, we'll fix it. And then we did. Like, it wasn't, you know, if he went to our congresswoman, she'd have to make some calls and do this or that, but all I have to do is say, hey, Steve, can you do this?
Yeah, exactly. Just like, I mean, that's exactly, that's every day. You know, I saw something, a particular business was overflow of trash, whatever, you know, told and said, hey, code, you may want to check that out. They notified the owner. It was cleaned up the next day. So, again, local government, you can have that, you have that direct pulse and contact with your officials, and vice versa for those officials that, like us, who are in local government.
So that's a really good thing you're able to do. You're able to amplify, you're able to do these things. And also, one thing you and I discussed before this call started is we both have full-time jobs.
Yes.
I don't want to get into that. We're talking about being, but there's a lot of people who are listening to these podcasts or thinking about running, and they look at what a council person or especially a mayor does, and they think, I don't have the time. They have the time. What's your answer to people who say, Marita's got the time, I don't have the time, I can't do it?
You have to prioritize time management. And I mean, I'm still trying to practice what I preach, because, like you say, you still have your actual job that pays the bills so you can, you know, live in a house in the community you represent, but also being a local, mayor or, you know, council person, basically a full-time job without full-time pay. So what I try to do is designate days where, okay, it's like, this is where I'm going to focus on this today, and this is where I'm going to focus on this today. So I have, like, mayoral working days and, like, office hours. Like, okay, this day, usually they're Wednesdays, because council meetings are usually on those days as well. But, like, okay, this is where I'm carving out, you know, this is where I'm handling all the emails, returning the calls, getting back to them. You know, obviously, if I get urgent calls that aren't on my designated days, I handle that and delegate it to the appropriate person. But again, kind of in my role, being mayor, it's unique because, again, a mayor, I don't have a legislative vote. I'm not DPW. I'm not code enforcement. A lot of people just hear the term mayor and think, oh, I need to talk to the mayor. So that actually when I do talk with them, and try to, you know, see what their concern is, a lot of times it's something I have to redirect them to the appropriate person. So, you know, whether it's like, okay, DPW is going to have to come out and address the downline, or, you know, this blighted property, or the weeds that are overgrown, that's actually, you know, a code. So a lot of times, I was telling somebody this, a lot of times I would say 80% of, like, my calls or emails that maybe I get, I end up rerouting that to the appropriate person. But it's kind of interesting, or I could say, you know, the part of being mayor is the connector. So sometimes when people call, I'm like, well, who do I talk to? I'm like, well, you know, it's not me, but I'll transfer your call to finance or whatever. So, you know, it's not just one thing, but if you're committed to, you know, you understand and see the need of why you need to run, like why, what is driving your passion to run, and making that time for that. And the key is to never forget why you ran, because that's what's going to sustain you. You know, if you lose that, if you get burnt out, resentful, then it's going to show. But always, you know, boundaries. You're only one person. Elected officials are only one person, and that's why boroughs, community cities have an actual staff where it is their full-time paying job to make sure that that community and city is operating effectively.
And like you said, you're only one person, but there'll be more people if more good people step up to run for office.
Exactly, and it would lessen the load. So you guys gotta run.
So, you know, you are... Do you know how many elected offices there are in this country?
Lisa, I'm sorry. Say that again, Tom.
Do you know how many elected offices there are in the United States?
Ooh, I can only imagine.
There's like around... the number. There's around 500,000 elected positions in the country.
All right.
And once you start adding it up, like, it sounds crazy, and then
I'm
like...
I was just going to say, there are 400,000 of them in Pennsylvania.
well, 100,000 are New Hampshire state legislators, but...
Oh, wow.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. There are a lot in New Hampshire. It's like 400 state reps, but... So, with that, you know, you look in D.C. at, like, some of the radical changes happening in Harrisburg after 2018 with representatives that no one would have expected a few years ago. And no one could do this by themselves. So, why should more people run for office? What's your pitch for encouraging others to do it? And how can they start?
Yeah, so number one, why more people should run... Our life and our livelihood depends on it. You know, every day, you know, we're complaining about, the state house passed this, or, you know, just, what was it, 2-3 weeks ago that week during budget season at the state capitol, where they're literally screaming and one representative is having a temper tantrum. Like, these are people who are representing us. So, you know, if people are thinking, oh, I'm not qualified, I don't have, you know, whatever like that, well, neither is the person who had a whole screaming match, you know, leading our state house session. So with that said, how to get started, you know, I always like to kind of research before I dive and hop in there. So I didn't necessarily go in thinking, you know, oh, I'm running for council. I mean, I made that decision, but I tried to get involved with my community first. So I, you know, joined a couple event committees to be a part of that, attended a couple council sessions to get a feel for what was going on. And then that's when I realized, okay, well, there really isn't anything happening, and we are kind of in dire straits. So, yeah, I should step up to run to help change that. But you want to make sure you know what you're getting into, because it is a big time commitment. And I don't say that to, you know, scare people or whatever. It's just about being realistic. You know, you have, yes, your council meetings or your office, whatever office you're running for or that you're going to hold, you have those meetings, but then, you know, you may get assigned a committee, and then obviously there's different community events you have to attend. So, again, just understanding you are only one person, and prioritizing and understanding your limits. So, you know, I think regardless, initially the whole process can be overwhelming, especially campaigning, but that's part of also, you know, making sure you have a good team, that you have kind of what I call the kitchen cabinet, like who's going to help you run your campaign, who's going to help with your graphics, you know, getting the message out. And you know, in my case, it was a lot of friends who had particular talents. One of my field directors is an amazing graphic designer and great communications person, so she became, you know, my field director. And in my case, my mom was my campaign manager. And, you know, a lot of friends who necessarily weren't just like, you know, oh, I just want to get paid or I'm into politics so much, they believed in me and my vision and wanted to help and give their talents where they could.
You know,
I would say, yeah.
I think it's really important what you just said, because I think for a lot of us, when we first get in, we're like, I don't know the people that get you elected. I don't know what to do. I don't have a pollster friend or a professional campaign manager. You have more than you know once you start looking around and asking and get involved.
Exactly. I mean, you know, everyone I talk to, like, I have a friend who loves spreadsheets. So she, like, did an Excel spreadsheet for everything. But it was great because it helped to categorize, you know, what was needed, who's done what. So, you know, talking to your friends and letting them know. And your friends, if they're really your friends, they will show up and be invested in you because they want not only the best for you, but they also see your vision and want to help realize that.
Well, I hope that more people will take up and work on their vision, and not so they can see better, but so they can run too, and hopefully they take you as an example, no matter what their background, so they can do what you're doing and make their community better. So if you're listening, take Marita's example, and I think you should run for office, right?
Yes, you should definitely run for office and find three other people too as well.
Awesome idea. Well, thank you, Marita, and good luck in Wilkinsburg. I hope you guys keep kicking butt.
Thank you, Tony. I appreciate you so much and all the work that you're doing in Bridgeport.
Great. Let's go Steelers, right?
Yes, woo! Here we go. We're going to the Super Bowl this year.
Awesome. All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the You Should Run podcast. Listen to past episodes and subscribe on Stitcher, iTunes, and Podbean or wherever you're listening at. Thank you again to Mayor Marita Garrett for joining the You Should Run podcast today.